There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio, supernatural news, parashare. And I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, as always, Tim Dennis. Tim.
Yes.
We are just days away, and this is going to be a big surprise for people. We're days away from the Michigan Paracon in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, where I've been saying I'll be on hand along with Shane and Cindy from Holzer Files, but it seems my other work wife will also be there. Tim Dennis will be at the Michigan Paracon. So not only will you get to see the best in paranormal TV programming, but the best in paranormal podcast programming. Both Tim and I will be there, and Shane, Cindy, and I will be there. So we're going to be there having fun. And Tim, you've got the Darkness Radio talking boards you'll have on display and available. Is that correct?
Yes, I'll have the Darkness Radio talking boards available for you. So come on out. And I know a lot of people are going, oh, are you kidding me? I want one. Well, kids, they'll be available only at Michigan Paracon for right now. So you're going to want to get out to Michigan Paracon and get you one of these Darkness Radio talking boards, because for right now, they're only available at the convention. So
that's right.
Get out there.
As soon as we've got more readily available, we will be putting them up over at darknessradio.com under the store tab. So you can go click that, scroll down the page, and you'll see the talking boards when they're available for full sale. So that's going on this weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun. Cindy, Shane, and I doing our first panel together as part of the Holzer Files team. Now, since it is supernatural news, I delivered this note on Friday's podcast, but the news had been released after we recorded last week's shows. I just wanted to address real quickly for people. Holzer Files has not been renewed for a third season. There's a difference between not being renewed and canceled, apparently. Mm-hmm. So we aren't officially canceled, but we haven't been renewed. And, you know, you can read between the lines on that. But they always leave the door open for a possibility of a return or something in the future with that show. So Holzer Files is no more. But I want to thank all of you, the Army of Darkness, for tuning in and watching the show, being a part of it. It was so much fun. I truly loved every minute of doing that show. And you guys made it even better by the great reviews and love that you showed for us with that program. So thank you very much. But fear not, my faithful friends, and don't cancel that Discovery Plus account yet, because Tim hopefully will be back with more Paranormal Night Shift. And I begin filming a new series. I can't give any more information than that, but I begin filming a new series September 1st. And there may be a recognizable face or two on that series with me. So I hope that you'll check it out. And I can't give anything away, but we will begin filming, and we'll be filming through middle part of November for a show I hope will start airing in spring. So you got to keep Discovery Plus, because you'll miss out on this program. You want to make sure you watch that. I also want to mention September 10th, I've got the Curse of Lizzie Borden 2-hour special that'll be on Discovery Plus. And Chris Fleming, myself, Sam Beltrusis, Luann Jolly, we get to investigate with some never-before-heard, really amazing EVP and crazy things that go on. So make sure that you tune in and check that out on September 10th. And do me a favor, watch it, rewatch it, and then watch it again. Then force your neighbors over and make them watch it. Offer them snack food, offer them soda pop. I don't care what it takes to get them in the place. Then lock the doors and make them watch the show.
That's not asking too much at all. No,
I didn't think so. No, right? I mean, just, you know, it's for your buddy Dave. That's all I'm saying. So hopefully with that, we will, get great ratings, and I'll be back for more Shock Docs. I know Cindy did that Shock Doc last year, looking into Ed Gein with Steve Shippey. I have it on good authority. There's another Shock Doc she might be a part of as well that'll be coming out. And as soon as we know more about that, we'll let you know. But see what you'll miss if you don't have Discovery Plus. And so just keep that. It's still a great way to support all of your favorite paranormal TV programs. And it's really the only place. And I do want to address this, Tim. A lot of people are like, well, you know, cancel and blah, blah, blah. And that's not how they make their money. Well, it is. They've transferred all their paranormal really over to Discovery Plus. Mm-hmm. That's their platform for it now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's going to be made available. By not watching it, it doesn't force their hand to move it back to TV. They will take that as a sign that, oh, people have lost interest in the paranormal, and they'll pull the plug on paranormal altogether.
Yeah.
So many of you have wanted for years one channel to watch all your favorite paranormal shows on. They have Ghost Hunters, Ghost Adventures, Holzer Files, Dead Files, Kindred Spirits, Destination Unknown, Destination X, Destination Fear, or Expedition Unknown. I can't remember all the damn titles of these shows, but they're all on there, and they're adding more, and these great Shock Docs. It's all under one umbrella for you, so don't pull the plug yet. You want to keep it so that way you can support the people that you like and care about in the field.
And if I may, I want to remind people of what life was like before the year 2000, when you struggled to see any paranormal programming on television. It was a wasteland,
exactly.
People. I mean,
yep.
Essentially, before that, you had Leonard Nimoy's In Search Of, and you had Unsolved Mysteries. And you had a few things that kind of dabbled, but not really launched into it. And then you had this explosion. And like Dave said, Discovery Plus is what's really keeping it alive. So I know you're shaking your fist in righteous indignation, and we get that. But really, this is the place that's supporting it. So, and there is great quality programming on Discovery Plus. I mean, and I'm not just saying this to show this because I'm looking after my own interest either. I'm saying this because I've got it in my place, and I'm scrolling through it and watching all the paranormal programming that's on there too, and I'm enjoying it. So you're going to want to get behind Discovery Plus, yeah. and keep it going. This is the place where we are getting our fix.
Yeah. Let's make out a point too. Do me this favor, folks, and we'll get off this cart in a second. Get the free trial, the 7-day trial, because I think you're thinking you only get the one channel. What you don't realize is how many channels are under the Discovery Plus umbrella, how many programs. So for all of you complaining, oh, I'm paying for cable already, you might be amazed,
yeah,
at how many channels are under this for $5 a month with commercials, $7 a month without commercials. So those of you paying over $100 a month for cable, you may be able to cut your cable bills and drop it to $5 to $7 a month and get, they've got like 20 channels underneath this umbrella, from mm-hmm. true crime to home renovation to paranormal to food to animals, history. You want it, they've got it. You would be surprised. And how many people have told me that? Oh, I reluctantly did it. I only signed on for Holzer Files. But man, I'm glad I did, because I realized everything I watch is under this and I dropped my cable. So it might save you hundreds of dollars by doing so.
Guilty pleasure on Discovery Plus, Flea Market Flip.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
That's a good show. I do love those kind of programs where they go in and look for those. Is that the one with the woman that used to be on like Trading Spaces?
Yeah, I think she was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very cool. All right. Well, we've got supernatural news. We've got your stories and more to share today. And tomorrow, Tim, on the show, we have a fellow Minnesotan who will be joining us, Martin Keller, as we discuss Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind. That's right. Tim and I will return to the skies with our guest Martin Keller as he shares tales of close encounters of the fifth kind, human-initiated contact in some of the most unusual geographical locations to high strangeness episodes at his home. That's tomorrow on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. And if you miss the live stream, we had to move it to Tuesday this week. We did the live video stream Tuesday night and talked about battling the djinn, exorcisms, possession, and had a great conversation with Cameron Pasha. We will, that audio will be up and available Friday this week. So you'll still get to hear it if you didn't get to see the live video. So for those of you looking for the live video Thursday night, it will not be there because Tim and I are in Michigan doing the Michigan Paracon, and which means we'll be drinking and trying to stay safe, socially distancing in a big location with a lot of people and a lot of alcohol, Tim.
Right. Yeah.
So I've built a plexiglass case to surround myself in.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Do you think that'll work?
Well, it works for Kirk Cousins, the quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings. I mean,
and I didn't even drill air holes, so nothing's getting in there. Tell me who's the dumb one now.
Well, I mean, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, why would you hurt my feelings? Obviously, I figured the way around. There's no way that the virus is going to get me inside a completely vacuum sealed box.
Yeah.
Screw you, COVID.
No, but Dave, you need to breathe. You need to breathe.
I'll breathe inside the box. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. For maybe 30, 40, 50 seconds.
That's how I take very small breaths, Tim. Listen, watch.
Yeah. Okay.
See, I could do that, which means I could probably stretch it for like 2 hours in that box before I have to release. And actually, by drinking inside the box, Tim, I'll have to get out every now and again to EVP.
But what about your tender, tender stomach, Dave? I mean, eventually you're going to have to release other gases into the box.
Tim, I'm so nose blind to that now, it makes no sense. Mm. So I'm fine. But let's get started, shall we? We've got an audio daily double to begin today's program with as a renowned physicist analyzes declassified UFO footage on a brand new Tucker Carlson original. Let's take a listen to that.
For close to 80 years, our leaders have told us that UFOs aren't real. They're weather balloons or strangely shaped clouds, but they were lying. For decades, we now know, based on troves of documentary evidence, the U.S. government has worried a lot about UFOs. Strange, unimaginably fast aircraft of unknown origin, violating military airspace and moving in ways that defy known physics. What are these things? How much should they worry us? Those questions are worth asking, so we did.
Physics is based on things that are testable, reproducible, and falsifiable. For the first time, we have videotapes now by which we can measure the characteristics of these objects. So this is now real science.
This is not just science fiction. This is not just conspiracy theory.
These things are real. They're violating our airspace indiscriminately.
The evidence 100% contradicts what the U.S. government and the military wants us to believe about the UFO phenomena.
This might be a subject that more journalists should take more seriously.
I couldn't identify it. It was flying and it was an object. That's all I can really bring back.
This footage from a DHS patrol plane shows a 5-foot-long object moving at more than 100 miles an hour off the coast of Puerto Rico.
Look at this thing. It's traveling much faster than it should. How many aircraft do we know can dive into the ocean? But these craft effortlessly go back and forth between the water and the air. Our missiles cannot do that. The stresses would be enough to rip the metal apart.
The U.S. government has collected many videos like this. Dr. Kaku sat down to watch them with the eyes of a trained physicist. He had no explanation for what he saw. After years of official denials, in early 2021, the federal government declassified video of some of the Navy's closest encounters.
We're just seeing a fraction of what the military has in its archives, and it's enough to make your jaw hit the floor.
Navy pilot shot this video off the coast of Florida in 2015.
Yeah, this is fucking going on, bro.
You can actually calculate how fast it's moving, the altitude, because we have the cameras, the equipment.
We're all going against the wind. The wind's 120 knots to the west. Oh, thing, dude.
And this object does things that no known aircraft can duplicate. These objects that we see on videotapes can do what we think no Chinese, no Russian, or no U.S. hypersonic drone can execute. They break the sound barrier with no sonic boom. They can hit the oceans and not break apart.
One of the most vexing mysteries about UFOs is why the federal government has lied about their existence for so long.
Just remember that our pilots have said that perhaps every day when they're on patrol, they encounter these things. But of course, many times they never report them.
That That's pretty cool. And having Dr. Michio Kaku weigh in on this certainly, I think, lends some credibility to the entire look. Now, I don't know Tucker Carlson, Tim. I hear nothing positive about him from a few of the articles I popped up online. He seems to have a very skewed perspective on things. But again, this is what the articles are telling me. This is what the you know, online bloggers mentioned. So I don't know if it's just them taking a guy to task. I mean, he wears a bow tie. I know Doctor Who tells us bow ties are cool, but I'm just not sure. What if anything, is Tucker Carlson going to help the exploration of ufology, or is he going to, hamper this because of his involvement in it?
Well, let me take a more objective tone than most people would with Tucker Carlson. Any news put out there, I guess, is good news. And any foray into this is good. The fact that Michio Kaku was included in the news wraparound is good. It includes some scientific basis to the article. So my kudos to Tucker Carlson for throwing Michio Kaku into the story. It shows that there's some, rather than, you know, spinning off into what could be hyperbole, he threw some scientific weight into the story. It's not an opinion piece, which is good. You know, a lot of Tucker Carlson is opinion, and it's, you know, based loosely on facts, much like, and I'll balance this out, CNN and Fox tend to be more opinion-based news than that, and I'll leave it at that. I'm glad that he's taken to looking at the UFO issue,
right.
And I'm glad that he's taking a look at it. I think if the news networks took a more serious look at this issue, that it would get more coverage and people would, not just people who have an interest in the paranormal, but people, the mainstream public would take a more serious look at it. If it didn't get like we've talked before on the show about the ha-has and the X-Files theme behind it and kind of the wink and a nudge and look at the subject, I think it would get taken more seriously in the public eye. And then we could start to have a real conversation about how we handle the entire issue of not only space travel, but science behind space travel and an actual agenda. Because right now we've taken what used to be a public agenda with that, and we've privatized it. You've got SpaceX. You've got billionaires going up into space, and it's become a for-profit initiative. We've stripped the budget away from NASA. And really, a lot of our science has come from space. And we've taken that initiative away. A lot of our advancements in society has come from the science of space. Now we can start that conversation again of, do we advance our society again by bringing that back under our roof? Do we benefit from maybe going further with that initiative? You know, do we benefit ourselves? Do we leave it to privatization? Or do we leave it up to corporate America to hope that they're going to do that? So there's some real discussions under this entire deal of engaging another civilization if it exists out there. So, yeah, I applaud Tucker Carlson for taking it under, because he's got a huge platform Monday through Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Can talk about anything, can talk about any political issue. The fact that he set aside that time to talk about this, I applaud him for it.
Yeah, I guess it looks like an ongoing little series he's going to do.
Yeah.
Yep. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. But there is more to the UFO story, Tim. A retired intelligence official claims to know where an alien base is hidden in the Mojave Desert. Somewhere deep in the Mojave Desert, the southwest of the United States, is a hidden base inside a mountain where extraterrestrials live. This is the claim from a self-described retired defense intelligence officer who now goes by the alias Anjali. I don't know if I'm saying that properly. It's A-N-J-A-L-I, so we'll just say Anjali. Wednesday morning, the woman whose original name is Angelia Lynn Johnston. See, if she would have just kept her name when coming forward with this, I think it would give her more credence. But when you just like change your name to Cher, you know, a one word name.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's going to shake her credibility. She held a news conference in front of the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. Here. And again, folks, don't think I'm poo-pooing her. I'm glad people are coming forward. I just wonder if in the concept of coming forward, when you change your name and just want to be known as Anjali, as you decide to release this, do you think that hurts credibility? You know, I understand everybody's got their pronouns or however they want to be referred to now. And that's cool. I respect their individuality on that. I just think if you really want people to take you seriously on this, maybe you come out as, and what is it? I don't even know how to say her name. A-N-G-E-L-I-A, Angelia?
Angelia
Lynn Johnston. You maybe stick with that for a little bit and then slowly shift the name over. Hey, but my nickname is Anjali, right? So that it sounds less Madonna, Cher, Bono, Scooby-Doo. You know what I'm saying? Just, I don't know. Maybe that's my take on it. She's announced she will be bringing an astronaut and scientists to the secret base to meet with higher beings. That's what Anjali said and how she met the beings in January of 2018. There's not a date yet for the event, but Anjali said it will happen before the end of 2021. Now, in front of a small gathering of people, she told her story of meeting two strangers who showed her the tunnels to the base. She said it was there that she met two aliens of different races who communicated with her through consciousness. The news conference was streamed live online, and we're not going to play it because it's an hour and a few minutes long, but I've got the link up for this news story at darknessradio.com under the news tab. If you click on it, you can see this news story and then go down and look at Anjali's press conference live in Washington, D.C. It took place on August 17th. So, you know, it is kind of a shame when a former insider, right, a retired intelligence official, has a press conference in front of the Washington Memorial, or I'm sorry, the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C., and only a handful of people show up for it.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think that's a bummer. You know, you would think maybe they would have sent more. And I'm looking at the pictures here. You know, it looks like a couple of small little cameras set up. It doesn't even look like it was that big a press conference, which is weird. I thought we were getting to a different point now where people would, you know, be more interested in hearing these stories and coming forward with it.
Well, yeah, I just want to save you a couple of emails here.
Okay.
Are you ready?
All right. Fire away.
Anjali.
That's how she pronounces her name.
Anjali. Well, if we watched, I bet if I would have paid more attention when she did the press conference, no, I would have heard exactly how she says it.
It's fine. I don't want to save the wrath of the people.
No,
from you.
You're right. You're right. I understand that. All right. Yeah. We hate the wrath of the people. That sounds so horrible. The wrath of the people. Hey, Demi Lovato and Katy Perry have opened up as well, as we've reported on the show over the last couple of years. There's a lot of speculations about the aliens, as some people believe there are other living beings also in the galaxy other than we humans. The beliefs about the supernatural entities are not limited to just us common folk, Tim. Even A-lister celebrities have some belief in them. As a matter of fact, American singers Demi Lovato and Katy Perry also share some of the same belief sets. The 36-year-old Perry, who started her singing career at 9 while singing in a church, said she is convinced that aliens are real and that they live in the universe. "I see everything through a spiritual lens," she said. "I believe in a lot of astrology. I believe in aliens. Yes, aliens," Katy Perry said while speaking to GQ about her religious beliefs. "I look up into the stars and I imagine how self-important are we to think that we are the only life form." Now, Demi Lovato also shared the same belief as Katy Perry. How self-centered would we be as humans to believe that we are the only things living in the universe, said Demi at an interview with Seth Meyers. Now, Dwayne Johnson, also known as The Rock, or the guy who tried to steal Dave Schrader's eyebrow and didn't do as well with it as I have, has a peculiar opinion about the aliens. He said, I think they come in all forms, and they increase when you drink.
Yeah,
might be a little tongue-in-cheek from The Rock.
Well, he does have his own tequila out there.
Ah.
You know, our friend Big D, he got a whole case of it sent to him recently. Oof. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, former One Direction member Zayn Malik, I know he's your favorite of the One Direction set, Tim.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything, but...
Yeah. Not only believed aliens exist, but also he seems to be acting upon their suggestions. Is that how he explains his strange probing fetish?
Well, a little bit, yeah.
He said that part of why he left the music band was because an alien spoke to me in a dream. Ah, that's interesting. I wish he'd go into it a little bit more. That was the end of what he had to say. An alien spoke to him in a dream. I'd like to know what the alien said. He's like, dump the losers. I got a direction for you. The universe. Maybe.
Funny, he hasn't done much since then, has he?
Wow, you're the fan. You're the super fan with the cardboard cutout.
Well,
Tim and I sometimes will have dinners together. I bring my Donny Osmond cardboard cutout and he brings his, and it's like we play, you know, cribbage together, all four of us. It's weird now that I think about it and speak it out loud, Tim. It is weird what we do, the things we do. Very weird.
Well, at least we have company at dinner. I mean, you know, it's so we can set for four rather than for two. I mean, it feels like a dinner party rather than just, you know, an intimate dinner for two.
You'd think with all of my multiple personalities, we'd have so much more going on at those dinners.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I mean, this way it feels like there's a physical presence there rather than just esoteric. I'm using big words here.
I've got an email here, but I'm not sure how I like the opening of this email. Because although they do it in the proper order, I feel like they've given you a title and I'm just left Dear Dave. I could be like any Dear John. Check this out. Dear Dave and fellow cigar aficionado Tim.
Oh, hi. Yeah. Now we're up to something.
You sound very prestigious like that.
Oh.
Just remember, though, Bill Clinton, also a cigar aficionado. I'm just going to leave that out there. In the early 1990s, this email begins, I was very much into having an out-of-body experience, or an OBE. I had many books, workbooks, and CDs to help me have an OBE. After about 6 to 7 months of practicing, one night I came very close. I was using one of my CDs. The narrator was walking me through deep breathing and relaxing all parts of my body, from my head to my toes. I suddenly began to hear a buzzing in my head. It was like standing close to a beehive. Then my body felt as if it was vibrating. I could tell that the buzzing in my head and the vibrating of my body were soon going to be in sync with one another. It was taking all my courage and will to keep relaxed and wait for the buzzing and vibrating to sync. Then it finally happened. The buzzing in my head and the vibrating in my body became one. And at that moment, a part of me lifted out of my body. I was terrified. I was in full panic mode. I no longer wanted an OBE. My wish was granted, and I slammed back into my body from what felt like a 3-foot drop. I quickly sat on the edge of my bed with my body covered in a cold sweat and the sound of my heart beating in my head. Right then and there, I swore to myself that I would never try to have an OBE ever again. But my short OBE had opened a crack, or perhaps a window, that let an entity in. After I had finally gotten asleep, I heard a loud bump in my room, a sound that would have normally caused me to sit right up in bed. But this time, I was wide awake and my eyes were open, but the rest of my body frozen in place. I couldn't move. I couldn't even scream. What I saw in the dark of my room, I can only describe as a faceless Grim Reaper. It floated like fog closer and closer to my bed until it was directly over the top of me. It then bent down, and with the voice of a cackling witch, it said,
Remember, it's very important that you remember what I'm about to tell you.
Then the next thing I hear is like static. My static isn't working so good today, Tim.
Well, yeah.
Like when you turn on an AM radio and tune it to a location between two stations, you hear something, but nothing you can make out. And then the entity vanished. So he's kind of a dick entity. He's like, mm-hmm. Remember what I'm about to tell you is very important. Right? It's like that old game when you want to get off the phone with somebody, you start crinkling the potato chip bag. I'm going in a tunnel. The entity would visit me on and off for like 5 years. It was the same every time. I would be frozen in my bed. I would drift over to me and say, remember, it's very important that you remember what I'm about to tell you. I'm glad I no longer have the entity coming to me at night. I also never found out what it was I was to remember. Have either of you ever heard of anything like this before? I'd love to hear your thoughts on this matter. Best regards. That comes from Paul C., fellow cigar aficionado, is what I'm guessing the C stands for, cigar aficionado.
Yeah. Yep.
I've never heard of that. I mean, I've heard of, you know, we had Dr. Andrew Nichols on the show. He had an out-of-body experience, and when he returned to his body and was floating over it preparing to re-enter his own body, the eyes opened. They were jet black, and his face had this huge, creepy smile on it. Do you remember that story?
I do remember that, yeah.
Yeah, that's freaky. Freaky as hell. But I would have to ask him. You know, with your permission, cigar aficionado Paul, I will forward this to Dr. Andrew Nichols and see if any of this makes sense to him. But you've got to let me know if that's okay for us to forward it on to him and get that opinion. And then maybe we can have him on the show at least to talk about that aspect of the story. So I'm up for that if you are, Tim.
Yeah, that's fine. I'd never heard of that either. On a side note, Paul, hit me up at tim@darknessradio.com. Let me know what sticks you've tried lately because I'm curious. I want to know what you've been trying. So
is that what the kids call them, sticks?
That's the inside lingo. Yeah.
Huh. Sticks.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
So, yeah.
I would have called them dirty ropes.
No.
Bernie, dirty ropes.
No,
cigars are so smelly. I've tried. You know what? I'm like I am a girl drink drunk, which is probably offensive in today's world, meaning I like really girly drinks, fruits and such. I love, you know, the sweeter, the fruitier, the better, which is how I like my men. Well, you know that, Tim.
Yeah.
I also like a Swisher Sweet. If it's got like a flavor of like cherry or vanilla, I'll puff away on it. But if you just bring me like an El Ropo, you know, dark Macanudo, you know, a Romeo y Juliet.
Now, see, those aren't bad. And in fact, I've got one. There's one. Actually, I've got the perfect one for you. It's only a $4 cigar. But it's perfect. It's kind of in that vein. It's kind of like a Romeo y Julieta. Okay. But I think it's an H. Upman, if I remember right, but it's just light enough and it's,
does it have a good flavor? Like a birthday cake
or no, it's not a flavored
cigar. Perhaps Twinkie flavored. If it could have a Twinkie flavored cigar, I'd be hooked.
No, it's not a Twinkie flavor or anything like that, but it's just a nice light cigar. It's not anything overpowering or anything like that, but it's just nice. It just has a nice flavor to it. Now, see, the distinguished palate will be able to tell differences like more of a woody flavor or chocolate flavor or even like hints of coffee or there's different flavors within the leaf that you'll be able to tell with a more distinguished palate. So I mean, there's you know.
Yeah, I don't think so. I'm gonna stay away from that. You know what I am gonna go to though, Tim?
What's that?
I'm gonna hang out with Grace, the ultra lifelike nurse robot.
Oh no, don't do that. No.
Uh-huh.
No.
Yeah.
No.
In 2016, Tim, Hanson Robotics, they took the world by storm with Sophia. You remember Sophia, who joked about ending the world AI intelligence.
Yeah.
She was, you know, you give a robot a sense of humor and everybody's all wigged out by it.
I am.
Now, Sophia was famously given Saudi Arabian citizenship. Now, the Hong Kong-based robotics firm has unveiled its latest invention, Grace, a humanoid robot that it hopes will revolutionize healthcare. Designed as an assistant for doctors, Grace is equipped with sensors, including a thermal camera to detect a patient's temperature and pulse to help doctors diagnose illness and deliver treatments. Now, the android is a companion for patients too, Tim. Huh? Specializing in senior care, and you and I are getting closer to that every week.
Well,
Grace speaks three languages: English, Mandarin, and Cantonese. She can also socialize and conduct talk therapy. Robots like Grace are intended as a support for medical professionals. It's a small world after all. Is that what you were playing?
I was trying to find my Terminator music. It didn't go out over the air. I'm surprised you heard it.
I heard it. It's a small world. See, it's because the AI wants me to know that you're trying to mock my love and admiration for robotic nurse Grace, Tim.
Tell me what this is.
Phenomena.
Was that the Flash Gordon theme?
I think it was. What's this?
Pope Francis made his first public appearance.
Well, that was like Seth Meyers. So nobody else is hearing this. It's just in my ear.
It's just in your ear.
People are going to think we're crazy.
Nobody's hearing it but you right now. Huh. Okay.
Well, robots like Grace are intended as a support for medical professionals rather than a replacement, says Hanson Robotics founder and CEO David Hanson. Using AI and robotics in the context can help gather important data for healthcare providers to assess the well-being of a patient. Developed specifically for the medical sector, Grace's launch comes in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic, when there has been increased demand for telehealth solutions and contactless care. According to the International Federation of Robotics, the IFR, global sales of medical robots were already on the rise before the pandemic, up 28% between 2018 and 2019. The IFR predicts that the sector's value could nearly double in the next 3 years. Hanson Robotics says it will begin mass producing robots, including Sophia and Grace, by the end of 2021, Tim. Bend over, Tim. I need to take your temperature.
No,
I don't think you're supposed to put it in and out.
Nope. See, that's what'll happen too. And they'll break off the glass thermometer when it's in there. I'm just saying.
Oh, good God. You know the difference between an oral and an anal thermometer, don't you?
The taste.
Yeah, it is. Hi-o.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's a cutie. You know what? I think Pokemon was the first to actually introduce the robotic nurse, Tim. That's the kind of nerd I am. There's a nurse that appears in all of these Pokemon episodes, and she always looks identical, and she's wherever they end up. So I'm guessing that's a robotic nurse.
Actually, Dave, no, if you really want to nerd out here, Magneto had a nurse nanny up on Asteroid M in the X-Men comics way back in the late 70s, early 80s.
Ladies and gentlemen, this year's Nerd Olympics champion and record holder, gold medalist, is back in full form. Let's have a wild round of applause for Tim Dennis for that bit of knowledge.
Oh, round of applause. Okay. Here we go. Thank you.
They love you up there, Tim.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah. So look, that's good news, Tim. A beautiful, intelligent AI robot to take care of you. And I'll tell you what. It's scary right now. A lot of hospitals are so wickedly understaffed because employees are refusing to work, refusing to take the vaccine. So that I'm not belittling. Everybody gets a choice. But, they're leaving in droves. And a lot of these hospitals are struggling because they don't have enough nurse staff. I give full credit to the nurses that stay on staff, the doctors, anesthesiologists, everybody that does what they need to continue their journey and helping people. Thank you very much. And I'm not slighting the ones that walked off, but, obviously it's leaving an important void in our system.
Well, I mean, you've just got the mental health aspect of things, too. I mean, when you're overwhelmed for as long as they've been overwhelmed, eventually you're going to break down. I mean, in the human aspect of things, doctors and nurses can't keep going at peak capacity for as long as they've been going. Let's just face it.
I agree. Very, very weird. But we have a second audio Daily Double story today, Tim, as we're talking about AI. This really excites me because I worry, you know, radio speaking is my life. And what if, God forbid, I lost the ability to speak? You remember what happened to Roger Ebert? He had that jaw cancer. They had to remove his lower jaw. Mm-hmm. He couldn't speak. Val Kilmer has a documentary out now, I think on Amazon Prime, called Val. And if you haven't watched it, you should. It's a really touching retrospective look at his life. And I don't feel pity for him because I don't think that's why he put this out there. I think he's showing the resilience of human nature in this documentary. But it does kind of torture the soul because you see somebody who loved to entertain with the spoken word and having that taken away from him. Val Kilmer, though, is getting his voice back thanks to an AI prototype. The 61-year-old actor went public with his throat cancer diagnosis back in 2017, which he received after feeling a lump in his throat and waking up in a pool of blood. As a result, the Hollywood star underwent a tracheotomy that severely altered the sound of his voice. Now, with the help of Sonatic, a UK-based software firm that clones voices, Kilmer was able to speak again after creating an AI version of his voice. Earlier this month, Sonatonic shared a brief clip of those results. And here is that actual clip. Remember, this is not Val Kilmer speaking. What they have done is that they've Kilmer was very involved with this development of the AI prototype, working closely with Sonatonic and providing archival footage of his voice to create the model, according to The Wrap. He says, I'm grateful to the entire team at Sonatonic who masterfully restored my voice in a way I've never imagined possible. Let's give that a listen.
We all have the capacity to be creative. We're all driven to share our deepest dreams and ideas with the world. When we think of the most talented creative people, they speak to us in a unique way. A phrase we often hear is having a creative voice. But I was struck by throat cancer. After getting treated, my voice, as I knew it, was taken away from me. People around me struggle to understand me when I'm talking. But despite all that, I still feel I'm the exact same person. Still the same creative soul. The soul that dreams ideas and stories constantly. But now I can express myself again. I can bring these dreams to you and show you this part of myself once more. A part that was never truly gone. Just hiding away.
So that, to me, is beautiful. What a great restorative feature AI has created. Now, in the documentary Val, mm-hmm. I don't know, have you watched it yet, Tim?
No, I haven't.
It's really cool. It's an interesting look because this guy, he was a teenager, of course, when he kind of started very young. And he was one of the first people he knew that had one of those big block video recording cameras. And he took it everywhere. So there's some footage of him when he was, you know, very young, hanging out with some very young Kevin Bacons and Rob Lowe's and other celebrities that he was friends with growing up. So you get to see this unique perspective and look in his life. But his son does the narration and he sounds just like Val Kilmer.
Hmm.
So it's really beautiful, which also then that's kind of when your soul aches a little bit when you hear Val, because he has to plug like the hole in his trachea in order to speak.
Yeah.
And I promise you, I'm not mocking this is, but I'm just giving you an example. It's, you know, you hear the way I'm speaking right now.
But it makes it more lightless.
And it's so painful to hear a man who had this kind of melodious voice, and his portrayal of Jim Morrison in The Doors is by far one of my favorite movie portrayals ever of a celebrity. I mean, that guy became Jim Morrison. I would say there's only three like that in the world that I've been blown away by. His portrayal of Jim Morrison, Jamie Foxx's portrayal of Ray Charles.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And of course, Rami Malek's version of Freddie Mercury.
Yeah. Yep.
They like became the full embodiment, not an actor. You forget that there's an actor playing that role. They're so good at what they did.
Yeah.
In that role. And that's, did you realize that's Val Kilmer singing in the Doors movie?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
He had lobbied for a bunch of movies, and he would hear a movie was coming out, and he would go out and film using his video camera. He would film a scene that, you know, he would then send in to these famous directors to try to get a role. And it didn't work until the Jim Morrison bit, and he would practice singing as Jim Morrison and doing the voice. And when Oliver Stone heard it, he hired him immediately, I guess. It's really incredible. But there's AI restoring life, making things better.
Until it decides it doesn't want anything to do with him anymore, and then decides to enter into other parts of his body and then blows him out.
Telemarketing calls from Jim. Yeah.
No, and then blows him up from the inside.
Well, didn't swallow it, Tim. It's not like a swallowed voice box that he now has. He can now type his words, and the machine will take all of the words that he's spoken through the years. I wonder if any of them was from Tombstone. So once in a while, he slips into this kind of, you know, Southern drawl. I'll be your Huckleberry.
I'm sure there's different accents, and you'd have to. I mean, as an actor, wouldn't you want different accents and things so you could just jump back into it?
I would. Yeah, I don't know if he'll ever be able to use that aspect again. But
be a voiceover artist. Good.
Yeah, but if you heard through that entire thing, it's all kind of very monotone and like he's just speaking to a close friend as opposed to any acting. I don't hear much inflection in the words that he states. You know what I mean? There's no variance. So I think with this, it would be an easy way to do interviews and communicate and still hear that voice. But I don't know if acting, you know, I guess they can he can mouth it and then they can dub in the voice. I don't know.
How long has Shatner been doing monotone now? For how many years?
Wow. How dare you?
He's made a living on it.
You know, it was great. Actually, he's not monotone. He's very animated, which is what people pick on him for. But he's got that staccato, that weird staccato.
Yeah.
I saw him when he was here at GalaxyCon in Minnesota. And he made one of the best comments, dude, for as arrogant and egotistical as people say he is, right? And I'm sure he can be. He is extremely charming. And he was up on stage and somebody came up and mentioned the Shatner method of acting. And he goes, I'm sorry, what do you mean? And the kind of crowd just goes silent because you've heard the audio of like when he rants.
Yeah.
And, you know, like there's that famous audio of him just being horrible to a producer when he was doing a voiceover for a commercial.
Mm-hmm.
This is William Shatner, and I would like to invite you to take a journey with me into the 21st century. So take the next few minutes and listen very closely. You'll be amazed at what you hear. Okay?
Can there be a little more excitement in the beginning?
I love it. Okay. All right.
It sounded like really laid, you know, really super laid back.
Well, I'm saying, okay, I'll try and do that. Let's do take two. This is William Shatner, and I would like to invite you to take a journey with me into the 21st century. So take the next few minutes and listen very closely. Speak up. And maybe you better do it the way you hear it. Do it for me. No, I mean, just go ahead.
This is William Shatner, and I would like to invite you to take a journey with me into the 21st century. So take the next few minutes and listen very closely. You'll be amazed at what you hear.
Is that the way you'd like me to do it? Okay, ready. This is William Shatner, and I would like to invite you to take a journey with me into the 21st century. So take the next few minutes and listen very closely. You'll be amazed at what you hear. Okay, I think that came pretty close.
Are you making fun of me?
No, I believe that you asked that was about the way you did it. I wasn't jesting.
Okay. I'm sorry. I don't know.
Maybe. No, I insist. Now, What I want you to do is on pay. Is that satisfactory to you?
Maybe I should have just kept my mouth shut.
No, because if your mouth were open, you'd have popped some pills in them. So do the next paragraph for me, page two.
Well, I don't know. I really don't want to, because I think you actually have a better, much better view.
No, I don't think I do. I would like to hear you read the second paragraph so I can do it that way.
You know, I really, you know, now that I looked at the different things you did, I really like the first one.
No, I like it better the way you did. Really, I mean it. Please, read, play, so I can get an idea of what you want. No, I'm going to do it the way you think it should go. No, I am going to do it the way you're reading it, okay? I know you're here to see that I do it the way the company wants it, so I'm going to do it the way you read it.
But I don't want you to do it.
But you're telling me how you want me to do it.
Well, I'm sorry.
No. I am going to do it your way. No, there's no apology necessary. You know what you want. You know what you want.
No, I don't. I mean,
you come in here and you don't know what you want?
Well, I come in here because I know you're a professional. I mean, and you know how to do it. And I'm sorry I even said anything.
No, I am going to do it the way you want. Every paragraph. And you'll send it back to town and you'll see whether... I hope it will please everybody else. As long as I'm pleasing you, that's all that matters.
Mr. Shander, would you please, you know... I don't feel right about doing it, Tap. I really...
Well, no, you felt you wanted something done on the first paragraph. I'm trying to do what you want. Okay, let's lay down the second paragraph.
All right, so that's one side of William Shatner, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other side is he's up on stage and he goes, what do you mean by acting? And the guy says, well, you know, the way you speak and act. And he goes, well, please, no, show me what you're referring to. So the audience is like kind of doing that nervous laughter.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy's like, I can't remember what the words were he said, but he was something like, we need to get to the end of the universe. Things are about to get really bad. And the audience kind of does that muted, nervous laughter again.
Mm-hmm.
Shatner looks at him and goes, brilliant, because I believed you needed to get to the end of the universe. And it was just funny because he showed that the inflections that he uses were to sell that moment. And It was just so cute because he was charming about it. And then he gets to the end of like telling them and he goes, now, please sit the fuck down. And the audience burst out laughing. It was just awesome. So I love that he's got that. And I digress anyway. But I just thought that was a cool little feature of Shatner's personality.
That is cool. Yeah. I just think that, you know, a tool like this could, improved upon, and we're always improving on software and what this type of voice module could do. I think eventually you could teach it inflection and you could save, like, especially someone like Val Kilmer, who is a master of emotion and being able to convey emotion at peak times in his acting. You could essentially resurrect a career where you could do voiceover acting because he could learn to program something like this to extend a career.
Well, listen, I don't think we're so far out from being able to see a Jimmy Cagney or Humphrey Bogart new movie. Could you imagine like a Die Hard movie remade starring Jimmy Cagney as Bruce Willis and Humphrey Bogart as and I know it's not Andy Richter. Why is the name of evading me? Who played the villain?
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that. Right.
Yeah.
And it's like Andy Richter. It's that kind of name, and I can't think of it. Anyway, save yourself time, folks. But you don't have to email it to me. By the time you post it or email it to me, I'll have already remembered. Alan Rickman. That's what it was.
Yep.
So it's like Andy Richter, Alan Rickman, right?
Kinda.
Yeah. But I don't think we're too far away. Because they've developed that deep fake.
Yes.
And you could take audio from these original movies and interviews that these guys have done and remake movies with classic celebrities in them.
Well, then you run into the argument, and this was the argument they had with Carrie Fisher in the last Star Wars movie, where you get some of the fans who, and I apologize if you're going to get butthurt about this, but you get some of the fans that are butthurt about it. That they're like, oh, it's like you're stomping on their grave if you do use a body double and then you CG over it, and then you bring in, you know, some of the the voice tracks, and then you know, and you do something like that. People think that even like hologram technology, like Prince had a thing, and I know I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent here. Prince had a thing where he never wanted hologram technology used under backing tracks. That's why during one of the Super Bowl halftime shows, they brought down, was it Justin Timberlake? I'm trying to remember. They brought down a sheet and then he did an homage or something like that. I'm trying to remember how it happened. But he never wanted a hologram made of him because he thought it was against his religious beliefs. It was like trying to capture a soul.
Right. And obviously the families would be involved in the decisions.
Right, right.
And bringing these characters back. But I think there would be a demand and an interest from a lot of these, and you know, especially now, if you've got a lot of the celebrities who are still alive, that you know, we might like to see Die Hard 27, Dying Harderist, right? and in 20 years, maybe Bruce Willis will have signed off on it and allowed them to come back and redo this, which would continue to make money for his family and heirs. I don't know. It's an interesting concept, but I would love to see. I just think it would be amazing to see some of the original. You know, I would love to see some really cool movies redone with celebrities that never got to act in them. Movies that you think, boy, this would have been a perfect character for Jimmy Cagney or Humphrey Bogart or Errol Flynn or, you know, but and then, just to see that happen, it would be interesting.
Let me ask you this, because then you have to ask this question. If let's say they do The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, but they cast Bruce Willis in it instead of Clint Eastwood, and they do it after right. Willis has passed away, but they have the permission of the family. Okay.
Right.
I know it's a way out there scenario. At that point, you have to ask the question, is it truly Bruce Willis's vision? Is it truly how he would have played the character? Because it would be somebody else programming in what Bruce Willis would have said, the way he would have acted, the way he would have,
oh, right. You know, obviously the ambiance and affectations that they wouldn't bring to the role, but it's a way to perpetuate, you know, it's kind of like the Hall of Presidents at Disneyland, right? I mean, it's just a way to revisit famous actors and actresses that we don't want to see go. You know, how great would it be to see Elvis in The Greatest Showman?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? To see musicals that are finally up to par, that aren't those campy, ridiculous romps, which I still love Elvis movies, but to see him, you know, playing P.T. Barnum, although I love Hugh Jackman in that role, I just, you know what I'm saying? It would be interesting to see some of these new evolutions. But you're right. I mean, there's always going to be a little loss of humanity. And sadly, it would mean that we've kind of given up on new actors and actresses.
Yeah, yeah.
But if they only did like a couple of classic remakes every year with this technology, just to see how people liked it. You know, what's really fascinating, I guess there was a YouTuber who redid for, this is a spoiler alert for The Mandalorian. If you didn't watch it, don't listen for the next 2 minutes. So when Luke Skywalker makes his appearance.
Yep.
The CGI is not great.
No.
A regular YouTuber redid it and blew away the ILM process. They're even blown away how good this guy's work was. Huh. So it's becoming to the point where people at home can do this.
I know. It's nuts what you can do with modern day technology, even at home.
Crazy stuff. Hey, folks, I want to address this up front. I'm going to be filming a lot during the next 2.5-3 months. So with that, there are going to be a few tweaks made. I will not have the ability to record as many Theater of the Minds. So we've got a short week this week because we're off to the Michigan Paracon on Wednesday. There are still tickets available at the door. I don't think you can buy them online anymore, but you can get information at miparacon.com. You can get tickets at the door. We're going to be there from Wednesday through to Sunday. Sunday, I leave Michigan and I go off to shoot the new series, and I won't be back until mid-November. There's a lot that goes involved in shooting. So I'll be focused mainly on just booking the guests and continuing with the show as we do it. I don't know how much time I'll have to do extra recordings. And the Tim can attest to it. The Theater of the Minds take a lot more than just me reading the story once. There's a lot of stops and starts because of coughs or mispronunciations or you know, just mistakes made in general. So I don't know that we'll get any Theater of the Minds for a while. So I encourage you, if you've got a great story, record your own voice telling us the story and send it to dave@darknessradio.com. Tim will lay some tracks behind it, music, sound, special effects, and we'll share it. Try to keep the stories between 5 to 10 minutes long and narrative. You know, I was walking through the woods. The snap of the branches beneath my feet were disturbed when I could hear the babbling of the brook and then the wail of the Sasquatch. Right? And tell that story. Email it to us. So if you've had a real encounter with any kind of strange supernatural phenomena, aliens, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Chupacabra, ghosts, demons, Ouija boards, send your story in, record it. You could do it on your phone now. Record it, send it in to us. I'll forward it to Tim. He'll continue to work his magic, and we will try to have Theater of the Minds take place while I'm off filming the TV series. But otherwise, we will be back probably around the end of November with more fresh Theater of the Minds that I'll be able to record and get back out there. I'm not saying I won't do a couple here and there, but I can't guarantee we're going to have them every week. It's just so hard with our schedules and everything going on. So keep that in mind. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We've got more of your emails, more news stories. We'll do that when we return right here to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the program. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis, as we discuss all manner of strange news from around the world. Tim, this isn't exactly AI, but this tells me that maybe we're starting to play God a little too much.
Okay.
Or is it just showing the resiliency of what human possibilities there are? I'll tell the story. We'll talk about it at the end here. This is the headline. A blob of human brain grows functioning eyes in a lab dish, sparking horror. Yeah, how about that? Mini brains grown in a lab from stem cells have spontaneously developed rudimentary eye structures. A batch of mini brains grown in a lab from stem cells have spontaneously developed working eye structures. Two optic cups on the tiny brain organoids are being grown in dishes, monitoring the development of eye structures in human embryos, according to Science Alert. Scientists running the experiment believe the breakthrough could help us better understand eye diseases. Our work highlights the remarkable ability of brain organoids to regenerate primitive sensory structures that are light sensitive and harbor cell types similar to those found in the body, said neuroscientist Jay Gopalakrishnan. Pretty sure that's how you say it. Gopalakrishnan. Gopalakrishnan, Tim, of the University Hospital of Düsseldorf in Germany. Now, these organoids can help to study brain-eye interactions during embryo development, model congenital retinal disorders, and generate patient-specific retinal cell types for personalized drug testing and transplantation therapies. Brain organoids are not full brains as we know them. They're small structures grown from stem cells harvested from adult humans. The stem cells have the potential to grow into many different types of tissue, this time growing into blobs of brain tissue. According to scientists, the brains are not able to reassemble any thoughts, emotions, or consciousness, or so they think, Tim. But the mini brains are used for research purposes, as actual living brains are ethically tricky to test on. This time, Gopalakrishnan and his colleagues were seeking to observe eye development. Now, eye development is a complex process, and understanding it could allow the molecular basis of early retinal diseases, the researchers wrote in the paper. Thus, it is crucial to study optic vesicles that are the primordium of the eye, whose proximal end is attached to the forebrain, essential for proper eye formation. That might be the smartest sounding sentence I've ever butchered on this program.
Yeah, absolutely.
The tiny brains grew optic cups in just 30 days of development and became clearly visible after 50 days in 314 of the brain organoids. 73% developed these optic cups. That's kind of weird. You start messing with this stuff and all of a sudden, you know, the brains are growing eyes. They say that there's no consciousness. How do you know? We don't know where consciousness lies. And if it can see, it's processing information.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. You bring up an interesting point in that, you know, it started to grow. It started to form things. And of course, it doesn't have a mouth. It can't communicate. But at what point, you know, is it forming conscious thought? At what point is it truly alive and a being, you know?
Yeah. It's very strange. What a weird, I don't know. I don't know. I just think it's bizarre.
Yeah.
All right. Here's our next email. Hi, guys. You could just refer to me as CJ for this email. I traveled to Minneapolis one weekend to visit my best friend in Red Wing, not Wed Ring. So all of a sudden I'm channeling my inner Elmer Fudd, Tim. They visited Wed Wing in Minnesota. He told me the tribe led by Chief Red Wing was buried on a high up cliff-like mountainside. I asked to visit, but that he not tell me where the burial ground was when we got there. I wanted to tune in my senses and see what I picked up while there. We arrived and decided to climb the mountainside, even though it was cold. We got to the halfway point and began hearing a drum beat. We continued up and arrived on a flat ground area. I began walking through the area and shortly after felt something brush past me. Thinking nothing of it as it was high grasses all around, I continued walking. My friend also noted he heard what sounded like someone run past. As I walked, focusing to see if I could nail the areas of burial without being told, I stepped down into a certain spot and an image of skeletons flashed through my mind. I turned to look at my friend, who nodded to let me know what I just found. A few steps later, a jolt of energy shot up my leg like stepping on a live electrical wire. I walked back to my friend, who said, "You felt that, huh?" "Well, yeah," I said. He said, "This whole place is granite and probably some quartz on top of a series of ley lines." We decided to head back to the car, but were stopped in our tracks by what looked like children's and a dog's footprints next to each other on the ground in the sandy path. That's when it dawned on me what rushed past me may have been a child spirit acting as a lookout for people who visited the burial grounds. And did he have a wolf or a dog spirit with him? There was no way in this cold weather there were living children walking barefoot on these trails. We continued back to the trails when we were again interrupted by what sounded like whoops from a war party, hoots and hollers as if sounding the alarm. We were up there alone, guys. Were they trying to scare us away? I tried to find the child spirit to meet up with them to let them know we were there. This is definitely one event I'll never forget. Thank you, CJ. Now, that's a weird experience, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Hi, Dave and Tim. Thanks for letting me send you an email. I've been trying to figure out what happened at my apartment a few months ago. And the best I found is that someone was summoning on a ley line. For background, my apartment is small. I was in the kitchen cooking and my wife was on the couch. I heard a noise. It sounded like a crack followed by what sounded like an inhalation. And then there was a large flash of light. It was very loud and bright. Did we read this last week?
Yeah, we were talking about how to summon on ley lines and RF energy and stuff like that. Yeah.
That's right. Sorry, I guess that one already popped up into my system. Hi, Dave. My name is Victoria. I'm a mother of three. My husband and I moved into our first home a little over a year ago. We knew something was here, but it didn't bother us at first. Now we're more concerned. My husband had a nightmare where our oldest son was being attacked by a group of spirits. I had a similar dream before where something was about to get him, and all of a sudden I hear, "Save him." I woke up and a figure was above him and moved above the window. I've seen a female with dark hair smiling at me in the corner of our room. I've been hearing talk in our spare room, just can't make out what's being said. My husband thought he has seen our dog, but she was in her kennel. We've both seen things outside our windows. We recently had a religious couple come over and they said a protective prayer in all of the doorways and made it worse. We want to know what exactly we're dealing with and possibly how to get it out. Well, Victoria, I don't know what you're dealing with, but obviously it sounds like the native spirits, and I don't mean necessarily Native Americans, but the spirits native to that area seem to be irritated and agitated. Is there something that you've done recently, an addition? Have you been renovating? Have you done any research on the house? You can always check diedinhouse.com, and I think it's like $14-15 to do a report. It'll tell you if there's any known deaths that occurred in the house, and it should give you a list of any of the people that died, maybe not in the house, but while they own the home. So maybe that would give you an idea of who to address. If you have trouble with that, check out househealing.com. Househealing.com. David Franklin Farkas, a former guest of ours, we sent a lot of people to him, and he seems to be able to remotely help them clear trouble spaces and troubled energy from these homes. So maybe he would be a good resource for you. If you continue to have problems, Victoria, please reach out to us, let us know, and we will see if we can connect you with somebody else.
I don't know why I'm saying this, Dave, but you know, elemental spirits have a particularly, they're particularly nasty, and they don't necessarily react to prayer very well. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if you had clergy come through and say a prayer, it might amp up an elemental spirit. I'm with Dave in that maybe you should get a hold of David Franklin Farkas right away. And he's probably your best bet on that deal. As he'd be able to weed out whatever is bothering you right away, and you'd probably be able to get to the root of it right away.
Yeah, he helps realtors all across the world help to realign energy patterns in homes that are trouble homes that can't sell. Mm-hmm. And he's got a pretty good reputation for doing that. And like I said, we've been sending people to him for over a decade.
Yeah.
And I've never once had somebody come back upset about it. If you continue to have problems and you want to see if maybe you have an attachment, we've talked to Robert Major on the show multiple times over the years. You can reach out to him at robertafterlife@gmail.com. They do charge, both of these people charge for their services and time, but tell them you heard about it on Darkness Radio and see if they'll throw you a discount or a good price. But they've been known to be helpful and very much so. I was just sent an email from a listener who had Robert Major help, and they sent us this great bit of information, but don't want me to share it on the air, so I can't officially share their testimonial or their name. But again, just another one in the long line of people that have been helped by Robert Major and his sister, Antoinette, or David Franklin Farkas. So again, househealing.com for David Franklin Farkas, or robertafterlife@gmail.com if you feel you have an attachment or maybe somebody in your house does. So Tim, I guess there's a TikTok controversy brewing over collecting human bones.
Really?
Yeah, we're talking about bone trade. A TikToker creator's controversial collection of bones has the internet once again debating the morality of buying and selling human remains. This issue is oddly specific, but the discussion isn't new. Tumblr veterans will remember having this exact conversation back in 2015. Human bone collectors and distributor John Ferry built a TikTok following of nearly a half million for his videos, sharing facts about the human anatomy, showing viewers how forensic anthropologists use bones in their research, displaying his literal bone-chilling collection of human remains. Ferry's pièce de la résistance, I don't know if I'm saying that right, Tim, I don't speak French or Canadian, which he refers to as his pride and joy, is a corner stacked floor to ceiling with human spines. His cat, Chonk, occasionally makes an appearance in the videos. Since first posting in early 2020 under the username John's Bones, Ferry has established himself as a voice of authority in all things bone-related. In one video, he shows how forensic anthropologists use evidence of jaw deterioration to determine a person's age at death. In another, he demonstrated how forearm bones twist around each other when a person moves their arm. The backlash started last week when Ferry responded to another TikToker user wondering if they found human bones in their wall. Ferry assured the user that the spine-like bones they found weren't human and showed what a real human vertebrae looks like. Panning across the room to his spine wall, Ferry then recommended that viewers familiarize themselves with human anatomy, as spines are the most commonly found remains in the wild. Why do so many have bones? One TikToker user commented. How do you have so many bones? And in the U.S., there is no federal regulation on the ownership, sale, or possession of human bones. So it is completely legal. Now, in the video replying to that comment, Ferry explained that he works with osteology, which is the study of the human skeletal frame and its functions. Osteologists work in forensic osteology to aid in investigating crime scenes, or in archaeology to interpret ancient ways of life based on surviving human remains. It's worth noting that Ferry himself is neither an anthropologist nor a forensic osteologist, but a buyer and distributor of said human remains. His company, also named John Bones, sells these remains to osteologists and medical institutions. And in the U.S., there is no federal regulation on the ownership, sale, or possession of human osteology. So it is completely legal, Ferry said in the video, explaining how he comes to own so many bones. But the flippant way Ferry explained the legality of his company's medical osteology trade alarmed some TikTok users. One commented that if they wanted to donate their body to science only to end up in a collector's possession, they'd be pretty mad. Others noted the legality can't be equated with morality, and some questioned how Ferry could guarantee that the remains were ethically sourced if he had no way to trace its origins. Those were people, TikTok user Osana Barbie 3 commented, not rocks to collect. Have some respect. In another video, Ferry admitted that many of the remains in his collection come from China, India, and Russia, and were likely that of very poor people, particularly of lower castes. He added that the remains were cleaned in India before Western companies bought and distributed them to private collectors. Ferry said his company's goal is to source what's left of those remains from private collectors and put them back into the medical community. But his inventory's origins only further stoked the outrage. The tag hashtag John Bones has nearly 4 million views on TikTok as of this last Wednesday. I can assure you the only thing I'm digging up is my houseplants for repotting. People seem to think I'm out there shovel in hand digging up bones myself and then selling them on the internet, Ferry said in an email to Mashable. I can assure you the only thing I'm digging up is my houseplants for repotting. But some TikTok users drew similarities between Ferry's collection and another human bone scandal that shook the internet a few years ago. The uproar was all too reminiscent of the infamous Tumblr bone thief who was exposed for allegedly stealing human remains from Louisiana cemeteries and selling them in what became known as Bonghazi. A Tumblr user shared a screenshot of a Facebook post by Ender Darling, who was known on Tumblr as Little Fucking Monster. I'm just reading it as it says here, Tim.
Yep.
In the Facebook post, Darling said that after rain, human bones resurface at the poor man's graveyard near their house, and they had been using the remains for witchcraft. They floated the idea of selling leftover remains from their monthly bone heists. Bonghazi scandalized and thoroughly entertained Tumblr users who dubbed it the last good meme of 2015. Darling, however, committed a felony, and in 2016, their home was raided by law enforcement for trafficking human remains. TikTok's backlash against Ferry and his company reminded users of Bonghazi. The app's affinity for absurdist memes and hot-headed social commentary is already similar to that of Tumblr's during Tumblr's golden age, and the renewed discourse over human trading remains only emphasized that sentiment. TikTok users stitched Ferry's videos with references to Supernatural, the book, The Fault in Our Stars, and TARDIS merchandise, nods to the mid-2010s, Tim, pop culture that dominated Tumblr. Another TikTok creator joked that the Tumblr veterans tried to warn us, and the app is just Tumblr reincarnated, and now it's circled back to the great bone debate. One stitched Ferry's video with audio from Taylor Swift's Exile, in which the singer croons, "I think I've seen this film before, and I didn't like the ending." Very strange.
So the only thing that separates John's bones from human remains trafficking is a license.
I guess so. And the fact that he's trying, now I'll give him some credit because he's trying to reclaim those bones from private collectors and sell them to osteologists and medical communities.
So he claims, but where are the records that say that he's doing that?
But witchcraft is heavy in the news this week, hence the name of today's episode. So people were talking about the fact of using some of the bones in witchcraft, which I don't know. Is that a real thing in witchcraft? I'm sure there are certain sects that do that. But I thought, you know, true witchcraft is based more in environmental science, if you will. With that said, witch talk amid uncertainty, a new fascination with astrology and the occult seems to bubble up on TikTok. One August evening, hundreds of people used a Sharpie pen to write their greatest desire on a single bay leaf. Then they lit the bay leaf on fire, letting the ashes fall into the bowl. This ritual meant to manifest people's goals into their lives is one of the many that has been circulating on social media app TikTok in recent weeks. Videos of rituals, spells, healing crystals, tarot card readings, and astrology predictions rack up millions of likes while drawing in untold numbers of curious viewers. The TikTok community in which such rituals thrive goes by the name Witch Talk, Spiritual TikTok, and Astrology TikTok. These names are shorthand of sorts, as the practices shared among followers originate from a multitude of religions, philosophies, or cultural backgrounds. As a whole, they're united by a fascination with the unknown and the unknowable. Now, witch talk and occult practices do seem to be on the rise. This increased desire to find spiritual meaning and purpose through occult practices isn't confined to just social media. Psychics and astrologers have seen their customer bases increased exponentially during the pandemic. Jade Sykes, an astrologer reader for R&B singers SZA, I don't know that one, and Kalani, told CNN her subscriber count on Patreon grew by 5,000 since the pandemic began. While astrology is typically associated with things like personality traits and compatibility, Sykes points out the discipline, which studies the movement of planets and stars in relation to the Earth, is far more complex. Its philosophies are prevalent around the world, and many people rely on it to make big decisions and gain some insight into the future. Meredith Grubb, a psychic with multiple viral videos on TikTok, told CNN she's done thousands of readings and is booked until January. The swell of interest has allowed Grubb to begin practicing professionally. It was never my intention to start a business. My intentions were I wanted to help humanity to be able to share this with the world. So that's where it really started, Grubb said, and it's only taken off from there. For some reason, seeking astrological insight as a daily routine, according to astrology app CoStar, has been downloaded 20 million times, nearly every 3 to 4 seconds in the United States, with no spend on marketing, a spokesperson told CNN. Even the aesthetics of various practices have found their way into the mainstream. Healing crystals and occult imagery have become popular home decorations and luxury status symbols. Herbs to cleanse and protect, rose quartz to aid romantic relationships, and candles to seal a spell are artfully displayed on Etsy and in cosmopolitan boutiques. Kemi Mani runs a spiritual wisdom account on Twitter and increased her following from 50,000 to 300,000 over the course of the pandemic. Mani said, while many people's relationships with astrology is superficial, as seen through interactions with astrology memes on Twitter, that actually makes the study and practices like it more accessible. It brings people to a new awareness. People can be interested in it and dabble, Mani said. When you're in the house and you don't have many people to connect with, and the only thing that you're craving is connection, that's what people find in the spiritual spaces. Connection. Somebody that can see you beyond the material. Now, the link between spirituality and uncertainty is as old as humanity itself. People look to spiritualism in times of turmoil, said James Alcock, a professor of psychology at York University, who studies parapsychological beliefs. That's why interest in the occult was already increasing before the pandemic, with the chaotic political climate in the U.S. and existential issues like climate change haunting the global consciousness, he said. This anxiety cries out for some kind of answer about the future, and the occult provides an avenue where people can get some kind of answer about the future. Alcock said, when you go to a tarot reader or a fortune teller, or you look at your horoscope, you never get any precise predictions about the future. But what you tend to get is something that's reassuring in some way. The pandemic isolated people from each other and rocked the stability of people's lives, often leading them to question their career choices, life priorities, and general place in the world, says Ian Anthony Waller, a PhD candidate at the University of California at Santa Barbara. Participating in rituals like astrology or tarot offers a chance to reclaim that. It's just a conversation where you're going to get to know yourself better, and you're getting to know the person that you're having the conversation with better, Waller said. It's literally cosmic. So you're having a conversation about who you are in relation to the rest of the universe, he added. As the amount of Americans who actively practice traditional religion has fallen, many who feel rejected by these religions have found places in alternative practices instead. Kira Tenenbaum, an astrologer with more than 25,000 followers on Instagram, helped found Fresh Voices in Astrology, an organization that hosts monthly webinars to showcase diversity in astrology. She said many of these people she's worked with at Fresh Voices are queer or non-binary and find a true connection with the spiritual side of astrology. A lot of people get into astrology because of the aspect of self-acceptance. Tabaron said it can also help speak to marginalized experience in a way that can be just as helpful and healing. There's a lot more in these articles. And again, you can check them out by going to darknessradio.com and click on the news tab there. You'll find it. But we do have some good news in the world of witchcraft, Tim.
What's that?
Well, the curiosity of eighth graders convinced a Massachusetts state senator to introduce a legislative pardon for the last victim accused of being a witch during the Salem witch trials back in 1693, the Associated Press has reported. Democratic senators, State Senator Diana DeZagolio of Methuen introduced legislation to pardon Elizabeth Johnson Jr., who was 22 when she was wrongly convicted of being a witch and sentenced to hang. However, she was never executed. DeZagolio said she was inspired by students in an eighth grade civics class at North Andover Middle School. Teacher Carrie LaPierre and the students extensively researched Johnson and how she could be pardoned for her conviction that was never formally cleared. It is important that we work to correct history, said DeZagolio on Wednesday. We will never be able to change what happened to these victims, but at the very least, we can set the record straight. It's been 328 years since the Salem witch trials took place when 20 people were killed and hundreds of others were wrongly accused of practicing witchcraft in the hysteria that started in 1692. One man died by being crushed to death with rocks while the others were accused and hung. More than three centuries after Johnson was wrongly convicted of witchcraft and sentenced to death, she finally is on the verge of being exonerated. Talk about slow justice. If lawmakers approve DeZagolio's measure, Johnson will be the last accused witch to be cleared, according to the Witches of Massachusetts Bay, a group devoted to the history and lore of the 17th century witch hunts. The Salem witch trials occurred during a frenzy of Puritan injustice, stoked by superstition, fear of disease and strangers, scapegoating and petty jealousies. In the 320 years that have ensued, during dozens of suspects officially were cleared, including Johnson's own mother, the daughter of a minister whose conviction eventually was reversed. But for some reason, Johnson's name was never included in various legislative attempts to set the record straight. Governor William Phipps threw out Johnson's punishment as the magnitude of the gross miscarriages of justice in Salem sank in. But because she wasn't among those whose convictions were formally set aside, hers still technically stands. Why Elizabeth was not exonerated is unclear, but no action was ever taken on her behalf by the General Assembly or the courts, DeZagolio said, possibly because she was neither a wife nor a mother. She was not considered worthy of having her name cleared, and because she never had children. There is no group of descendants acting on her behalf. Her bill would tweak 1957 legislation amended in 2001 to include Johnson, among others, who were pardoned after being wrongly accused and convicted of witchcraft. In 2017, officials unveiled a semicircular stone wall memorial inscribed with the names of people hanged at the site in Salem known as Proctor's Ledge. It was funded in part by donations from descendants of those accused of being witches. LaPierre, the teacher, said some of the students initially were ambivalent about the effort to exonerate Johnson because they launched it before the 2020 presidential election and at the same time COVID-19 pandemic was raging. Some of the conversation was, why are we doing this? She's dead. Isn't there more important stuff going on in the world? But they came around to the idea that it's important that in some small way we could do this one thing. So look at that. Eighth graders were able to help enact a change, Tim.
It's pretty impressive.
I like it.
Yeah,
I like it very much. All right. But that's not all. That's not all, Tim. We've got more witchcraft stories. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Kristen Ritter is back. She's playing a diabolical young witch in a thrilling new series for Netflix. Are you ready for this? Kristen Ritter playing a new kind of monster that goes bump in the night. In a People exclusive first look at the upcoming Netflix film Nightbooks, Ritter stars as an evil young witch, Natasha, who imprisons children in her New York City apartment. Nightbooks, which is based on the horror fantasy children's books by J.A. White, follows Alex Winslow Fegley, a boy obsessed with scary stories who finds himself the latest prisoner in Natasha's apartment. where he meets Yasmin, who is also trapped there, and learns he must tell the witch a new scary story every night in order to stay alive. The film, directed by David Yurovsky and produced by horror master Sam Raimi, is set in the same vein as other popular children's horror fantasy stories such as Goosebumps and Are You Afraid of the Dark? Night Books is Ritter's latest project for Netflix after she starred in Marvel series Jessica Jones. She's also famous for Big Eyes and TV sitcom Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23. Ritter also recently directed the pilot and the first half of the season and co-executive produced The Girl in the Woods for Crypt TV and Peacock. So witches are in abundance, Tim.
I was going to say she must be the different bee in 23 if you have to read her a story every night to keep her safe.
Yeah. Our final kind of witchcraftian story, doctor accused of sacrificing animals in his apartment for Santeria witchcraft. After a tip-off from a neighbor, investigators found at least 22 farm animals in Emilio Otero's three-bedroom apartment in New Jersey, including goats, chickens, and a dead pigeon. The doctor has been accused of sacrificing livestock for Santeria witchcraft in his flat after investigators discovered 22 farm animals being kept in his New Jersey home on Thursday. When authorities arrived at Emilio Otero's property on Van Horn Street, they were met with 7 to 9 goats, several chickens, and even a dead pigeon nailed above the door. The investigators from the Division of Environmental Health for Jersey City visited the apartment after a tip-off from Emilio's neighbors. Animal service agents were called to the flat, and they removed at least 22 farm animals that had been kept in a three-bedroom property. Creepy. The apartment's owner, U.S. Navy sailor Eliza Brevard Rodriguez, says that Otero hasn't paid rent on the flat since May and that she believes he is sacrificing animals and causing damage to the property. H. James Bohr from the Division of Environmental Health for Jersey City stated that there were about 4 or 5 dead chicken carcasses, their throats slashed, and they were left there in a pile. Santeria faith is based on the building of relationships between humans and deities, with animal sacrifice central to the religion. The animal is sacrificed to be used as food rather than for a particular spiritual purpose, though some believers do offer sacrifices to build their relationships with these faith deities. Pictures taken by the investigators show goats in the backyard of the property near to the pile of chicken carcasses. The doctor has denied sacrificing the animals and instead says he kills them legally for food. The Division of Environmental Health, however, disagreed and say that it's Emilio's actions that are very much illegal. Bohr said Jersey City has an ordinance that prohibits residents from keeping farm animals, livestock, in their city limits. As the investigation goes, Otero could face per count, not sure how many counts yet, but per count issued by inspectors, it could be $2,000 per count and 90 days in jail per count. With over 22 farm animals, that's a lot of money and time. Eliza, who has tried to get Emilio evicted, said, "I come from humble beginnings. I serve this country. I purchased this house. I live on the same block, and I wanted to get an investment property, and this is what this has turned into." Emilio has not been arrested and is not facing any charges, as Jersey police are still investigating the matter. Well, if this comes into a religious right, it'll be interesting. And the fact that, is this person also keeping goats and chickens and things on site because of the current pandemic and wanting to keep an ample food source? I know there are certain restrictions in these communities, but what are they going to allow admissible? And especially with the evocation of religious, you know, aspects of the story.
I don't think they take religion into effect if there's an ordinance, a city ordinance saying you can't keep farm animals regardless.
Yeah. I don't. It's a tricky wicket, man, when you start messing with religious principles and backgrounds. I don't know if that'll get like civil liberties involved or what. It'll be interesting. We have another weird animal story, Tim.
Okay.
I mean, we've all been bitten by a kid, right? And then threatened we're going to bite them back to show them that they shouldn't bite, right? Well, a man is alive and well after he was bit in the leg by a poisonous snake. And in a quick turn of events, the 45-year-old tribal man then picked up the snake and bit it in the head multiple times, killing it. The revenge attack happened in the rural village of Odisha's Jajapur district in eastern India. The man, Kishore Badra, was reportedly walking home from work at around 6:30 when he felt a sharp sensation in his leg. "Something bit me on the leg while I was returning home on foot last night," Badra told the Press Trust of India. "I switched on my torch and found it to be a poisonous crate snake. In order to take revenge, I took the snake in my hands and I bit it repeatedly, killing the viper on the spot." Oh, my God. The snake in question was a 3-foot-long poisonous krait. The common krait is considered one of the big four, a subcategory of the most venomous snakes in India, and takes the lead of most venomous. Krait snakes are responsible for inflicting the most human bites in India and Bangladesh. The venom causes paralysis of the muscles and often leads to cardiac and respiratory failure, according to experts. The man then walked to his home carrying the dead snake around his neck to show his wife and friends. He told PTI he felt completely fine after biting the poisonous snake that bit him. His wife and others in the village reportedly told Badra to go to the hospital, but he refused. Instead, Badra visited a traditional healer nearby later that night. Even though I bit the poisonous krait, I did not feel any difficulty. I went to a traditional healer residing near the village and was cured, he told PTI. After visiting the healer, Badra went back to his home and fell asleep. Reports said he was doing fine the days following this bizarre incident. Badra reportedly walked around the village for the next few days, presenting its dead body as proof of his conquest. He later told PTI he believed the healer saved him. Well, last week, news reported on a similar revenge attack. Rama Mato, 65, was walking through the village of Madodia in the Nalada district of Bihar when he was bit by a snake. Reports say the man, who was intoxicated at the time, was sitting outside his house when a baby snake bit him in the leg. The man quickly decided to capture the snake and bite it back before discarding the corpse by a tree. Mato's family said he was bitten 10 times in the face while he tried to chew on the snake. After the incident, his family urged him to seek treatment, but he refused and went back to sleep. Unfortunately, he succumbed to his injuries and never woke up, according to the police. Yeah, let's not bite snakes, folks. If you get bit, just go get some medical treatment. You son of a bitch, come here. That's not the way to do it.
You got to be a special type of crazy brave to do that kind of stuff.
Or drunk, as this guy was. Our final story is here. This headline caught my attention, Tim. Woman claims she married Michael Jackson's ghost, and he stays possessed inside me.
Mm.
Billie Jean is not this woman's lover. In fact, she thinks the late Michael Jackson is. Kathleen Roberts, a woman who claims she's Marilyn Monroe reincarnated, believes she's married to the King of Pop's ghost. According to an article she wrote for the Daily Star, Roberts alleged that Jackson's ghostly presence doesn't have sex with her. However, he likes to use her earthly body to dance, sing, and eat. Alongside a video, she revealed that the Billie Jean singer proposed to her clairvoyantly with a pink engagement ring. She also claimed in the article that they had the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. officiate the nuptials when she was getting out of a bathtub, as one would want to do.
Sure.
Michael stays in me all the time, so he comes to the restroom with me and calls these special bonding moments toiletries. Roberts wrote of Jackson, who died in 2009 at age 50 of cardiac arrest, "He stays possessed in me, relaxed, not channeling, and just enjoys living through me and communicating with me as a husband would." She continued, "So he likes to eat in me.
Mm.
He loves cookies. Mm-hmm. He cusses a lot more than I'd expect him to as a former fan." Roberts also admitted her supernatural senses have been previously mistaken for schizophrenia. She also explained that the late music icon doesn't like being touched back, the clairvoyant added. "He scares me with his spider visions and dead corpse visions if I try to kiss him or initiate romance physically. He is very bossy and points things out, like flaws and mistakes I make. I assume he got that from his father, so I try to overlook that because I love him and I'm not perfect either," Roberts said. Roberts also said that she feels special that Jackson chose her to be his wife. "They treat our relationship as though we are married. We have our ups and downs, but Michael, the truth is, I just can't stop loving you."
Clever song tie-in.
Yeah, here's the thing. If he starts showing you spiders and dead corpses, I'm guessing this isn't Michael Jackson's spirit. Yeah. I'm going to go out on a limb there. I could be wrong. Maybe he's kind of a sadistic prick in the afterlife, but I don't think you're dealing with Michael Jackson's spirit.
Maybe he really just doesn't want to be touched that much. I mean, you know.
Well, he can't put himself inside a woman, if you know what I mean, spiritually, and not expect that there's going to be some touching involved.
Well, I think he thought maybe, you know, she'd just want to play, but not like that play, but, you know,
yeah,
just want to play, not, you know.
Very weird. Yeah. Well, that's it for today's show, kids. Remember, there's no live video stream this Thursday, but a brand new podcast version of the show we did Tuesday night will be available on Friday. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. Come see us at the Michigan Paracon in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan this weekend. We'll get there Wednesday. It goes from Wednesday through Sunday this week. You can find more information at miparacon.com. And to find all of these news stories and more, go visit darknessradio.com and click on the news tab to find all these stories, the videos, associated pictures, audio, and more. We'll be back again tomorrow with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave, that's Tim, and this is Darkness Radio.